This is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network, bringing you all Noles all the time.
In Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
It's caught! Touchdown official, Calvin Benjamin!
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success, so you know something, I can really do this.
Game over! Noles are the champions of college football!
Jameis, why? Jameis, no! No! No!
And this is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network in association with NoleDigest.com, bringing you all FSU all the time. And as always, I'm your host, Jason Staples, and I'm joined today on this segment by Wayne McGahee III from NoleDigest.com. Now, we've not done an update since Florida State did an open practice, and there's been a few other things, including the first scrimmage and a trip to the movies. So we've got a little bit to update you on in this segment, and Trey here is going to be our point man in updating how things are in camp so far. So let's start with the open practice and some of the things that were most evident in this open practice. What was the number one thing that stuck out to you in this open practice?
The number one thing that stuck out to me in the open practice was probably the left side of the offensive line, to be honest. Kareem Moore and Rod Johnson are just a force of nature. Is the only way to describe it.
Now, hold on. Let's just stop now. As I recall, Jimbo Fisher called out a reporter just last week, about four days ago, for suggesting that the left side of the offensive line might be in good hands, might be set. So be careful now.
Well, Jimbo loves competition, but there is no competition. The left side of the line is set. The right side of the line, not so much, but the left side of the line is only to be referred to as a force of nature from now on.
Okay, we'll do that. But I mean, it's vintage Jimbo. He gets asked about, you know, where there's a real question on the team, and he loves to redirect. It's one of the things that, you know, the longer you're around Fisher, the longer you cover this team, the longer, you know, you get used to sort of the way he does things. He loves that kind of redirect where somebody says, well, you know, how's the right side of the offensive? Well, how do you know the left side's fine?
Exactly.
And it's like, you know, this team has so many question marks, so many things to be answered. And Jimbo wants to invent questions where there aren't any. Let's redirect from the real questions to things that might not be. So yeah, that's an obvious strength on this team, and you could do worse than have the blind side of your quarterback pretty well set. What else stuck out in that open practice?
The receivers, the young receivers, is particularly Auden Tate is going to be a freak show. Lawrence Dawsey told me the other day that he's made a couple Kelvin Benjamin light catches, and Dawsey isn't one to over exaggerate a young player, so when he says something like that, it actually means he means what he says.
He ain't kidding, and like we said on the first podcast of camp, that kid is very much a Kelvin Benjamin type clone. Difference is, in my view, is I think he's going to be a more consistent player than Benjamin. He doesn't have a lot of the concentration drops and some of the maturity issues that Benjamin did coming in. He's going to be good right away. Obviously, you know, they're stacked enough at receiver that, you know, I don't expect him to have a 600-yard season as a freshman, but very early you're going to look at a guy that is going to be pretty obviously an NFL prospect from day one.
I completely agree. Next on the list was Nyquan Murray. And I'm going to be honest, I wasn't that big of a fan of his coming out of high school, but I've completely done a 180 since he's been at camp.
That makes two of us.
Phenomenal.
That makes two of us. I don't admit this sort of thing that often, so enjoy it for those of you listeners out there, but I overlooked him too in this last recruiting class, and I'm having to go back and look at the high school tapes going, geez, you know, what was I not really seeing is so much on the tape? You know, obviously he's a nice recruit, but I was thinking of him more as a filler guy, and danged if he isn't really, really impressive.
No, he's been extremely impressive. Silky smooth. Dossie is absolutely raved about him. He's wearing number 80. And Dossie, when I talked to him, just went off on the number of similarities between those two. Now, that's high shoes to live up to for a kid that just set foot on campus, but the potential is there.
Well, the thing that I have noticed as I've gone back and looked is the thing that, aside from obviously some of the size things, I mean, they're fairly similar size, Nyquan Murray and obviously Rashad Greene, who you're referring to with the 80. But one of the things that sticks out to me that is similar, it's not just how smooth they run. I mean, they both have, you know, the really quiet head. Their head doesn't move when they run, which is always good for a receiver. But it's how they get in and out of breaks. And, you know, that's something that Green did as a true freshman that was unique. It was rare for a true freshman to have that kind of ability to burst out of breaks and to be so smooth through the cuts on routes. It's the sort of thing that usually takes a receiver a year or two to really develop that as a college level player, and they really never get to the point of being able to accelerate through the way that you saw with Green. I mean, he was a terrific route runner his whole career, and Murray looks, I mean, that's where I see the biggest similarities.
I agree. He's a phenomenal route runner. He has great hands. He's been consistently good, which is something that you don't always see with freshmen. In fact, it's something you almost never see with freshmen. So I've been very pleased with what I've seen with him, and I know the coaches have too.
Yeah, and you know, we haven't even mentioned George Campbell, who obviously, you know, he's been sitting out a little bit with a bit of a dinged head, but you know, he's another guy that obviously, you know, we saw hit what he could do in the spring game, and he brings a lot to the table as well. So it's really it's an embarrassment of riches with that wide receiver class, which may go down as one of the best receiver classes Florida State's. It's probably it may well go down as the best wide receiver class Florida State's ever brought in. And you know, you can say that because Randy Moss never actually made a contribution at Florida State. If you throw him in the mix, that class with Randy Moss and Peter Warwick is going to be awfully difficult to live up to. But if this group, you know, does make contributions at the level that matches the early indications, then you're starting to look at a group that actually will be in the same breath as that kind of group, the kinds of unusual mismatches and things that Moss Peter Warwick group brought to the table, and that's good news for Florida State fans for the next 3 or 4 years, and especially since they've already got another kid who's a huge body and very smooth, committed in the next class. So and they may well get one more on top of that. So the wide receiver position is in good hands going forward, and that's not even including the 2 5-star sophomores that are on this team. And you know, the guy that Fisher has been talking the most about this week happens to be Kermit Whitfield, who we had all but given up on, and apparently, you know, word is that he did do the work this summer after very nearly being left behind, and that kid's got the kind of speed where if he puts certain things together, you've got to put him on the field.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm buying the Kermit hype just yet. I need to see it from him. I mean, last year we thought that he was going to be, you know, we thought that he was going to make that step forward, and he was just non-existent. So, you know, Jimbo's been raving about him.
Well, you know, but we all know Jimbo likes to bring up the guy that, you know, he likes to redirect sometimes to some of the older guys for several reasons, and this may be one of those examples for all we know.
Yeah, I'm not saying that it is, but I'm saying that he needs to show it to me first.
Yeah, I'm with you. But at any rate, I think the fact that he's leaned out again, I mean, I thought he put on a little bit. I thought he was one of about 8 or 9 guys on last year's team that put on way too much weight before the season and really lost a step. But Carlos Williams was one of them. And actually, Carlos was in surgery today, which apparently went well. He'll be out for about a month after looking very good in his first preseason game. So, you know, that's obviously a bad situation for the former Florida State running back. But Carlos Williams being one of them, about half the offensive line last year, Eddie Goldman, and then obviously Mario Edwards Jr. coming into camp just massively overweight last year, and I thought Kermit was one of those guys who came in overweight, and you could see that on the kick returns last year where he just didn't seem to have the extra gear that he did before, that almost spooky acceleration that he had as a freshman. He just didn't have last year, and he was missing those seams. Now, there weren't as many seams because they were terrible blocking last year.
It didn't help that he was getting hit at the 10-yard line. It's kind of hard to accelerate.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is, I wonder whether or not, you know, freshman Kermit actually doesn't get hit at the 10 because he's accelerating past that already. So, you know, that's the thing I'm interested to see this year, at any rate. But let's move on to the next thing that you saw in that opening practice. We'll go two more things, maybe three, and then we'll go to a few other updates beyond that, and then we'll wrap this segment.
I mean, we need to start with the quarterbacks. I mean, we have to throw them in there because, I mean, it's such a big position battle. But there really wasn't much separation there, which you have a new guy. And
do
you
the
have
math.
A guy who's been in the guy who's been in the system for 3 years, and there wasn't much separation. Golson's footwork got a little sloppy at the end. He was a little high in some throws. Jimbo got on him, but he handled that well.
And that was the book on him coming out. That was the book on him coming in from Notre Dame, is that his footwork was really sloppy coming out of Notre Dame and at Notre Dame. And when he was off target, it was usually because his footwork was terrible.
Yeah, it was also, you know, he kind of fell apart in the latter half of the season as, you know, Brian Kelly turned purple, you know, 95% of the times, and he just didn't handle it well. So to watch him, you know, Jimbo absolutely just get in his tail, and he takes it, doesn't have bad body language, and just goes forward with it. I mean, it was late in the practice, but he did make improvements on the throws after Jimbo got into him. So I really like to see that.
Well, and one of the things that Jimbo told me over the summer that was just really interesting was that when he talked to Everett Golson, he found out that they didn't work on footwork on some of the technical things in terms of footwork that Jimbo had seen on film as well. Cause, you know, we were talking, I'd brought up some of the footwork stuff that I'd seen, and he said, well, you know, he said, I was surprised they didn't work on it. They didn't teach it. And that's the thing that's interesting to me, is that Jimbo felt like that, you know, a little bit more attention to some of those details would be really good for Golson. And I'm sure he's communicated that on, you know, this is something I do think Fisher does well with his quarterbacks, is he communicates to them, listen, I'm going to be all over you. I'm going to climb up I'm going to be in your head. I'm going to be screaming at you in your head, but I'm doing this because there are certain things that you need to do to get better. And there's a why to what he's climbing all over him for. And that's the sort of thing. And specifically that footwork, that was one of the things that Fisher felt he could work with Golson on that would make him better right away. And so, you know, that's interesting to see that right away in that first practice, in that open practice, that is.
Yeah, I mean, it's – I didn't expect Jimbo to be that all over him because, I mean, he was really chewing his tail at one point. I didn't expect to see that this early. I thought Jimbo may temper it just to, you know, work Golson in.
There's not enough time for that.
Well, I mean, you have a quarterback like Golson who absolutely fell apart when he was berated over and over and over again from, you know, last season. So it's just, what do you have to do in the situation to get him ready? You can't push him too hard at that point because he might revert.
Well, I think the thing again comes back to Fisher believes that you can climb all over a guy as long as he understands that you care, as long as he understands that you're actually teaching. And that's something Fisher really emphasizes. I mean, and that's something, you know, this goes all the way back to, you know, Fisher climbing all over EJ Manuel and some of the criticisms that Fisher got over, you know, climbing over all over EJ Manuel in particular, but Ponder as well before that. And looking at how he's handled his quarterbacks, and, you know, Steve Spurrier similar. One of the things that I've always made a distinction between the coaches who yell to yell. The coaches, you know, we've all seen the clips, the basketball coaches who yell, I'm going to kill, you know, I'm going to effing kill you. You know, they're throwing stuff, you know, this sort of thing. That's the stuff where there's no room for that. It doesn't do any good. And some of what I've seen from Brian Kelly strikes me as that kind of yelling. I've been in practice and some of the closed practices, some of the places where, before Fisher took over as the offensive as a head coach back when he was the offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach, watching him, what he was yelling at the quarterbacks, when he's yelling, he's teaching. He's climbing all over a guy. He's teaching at high volume and high intensity. And to me, there's a big difference between that and just screaming at a guy to communicate that you're unhappy. And that's the thing that I think that's what Fisher's relying on in terms of the difference in with a guy like Golson to basically make sure that he doesn't, crawl over and roll over and go into a shell. He's going to be teaching, and he's going to have told Golson, I'm going to coach you hard, but I'm going to teach. And I think Golson will respond to that. And every indication that I've gotten, every word that I've gotten so far is that Golson has been extremely disciplined and has responded well across the board in camp. Now, he has a long way to go, but he has responded very well, and he's worked his tail off, and he's doing everything that he's been asked to do and more.
I mean, that's what I've heard as well. The fact that he was able to grasp the offense so quickly and get on the same page with his receivers, with the offensive line, with everybody on the offense, and take command of that as quickly as he was is a great sign for him taking control of the job.
Yeah, and this goes back to what we talked about, what I've talked about on this podcast before. Fisher mentioned this a few days ago, where he said, "Listen, it's not about understanding or grasping the whole playbook. What really matters is, can you do the few things that we're going to feature with you as the guy?" And I thought that communicated a lot. Fisher has played a lot of this close to the vest, but some of the stuff going back into the summer, some of the things that he said around that time, and also now more in some of these interviews, if you read between the lines, he's communicating that he's not running the same offense that he ran for Jameis Winston. Where you can open the playbook and you can basically say you've got full autonomy to run what you think is best at this point. Let's just go. He's not running that. What we're going to see is something a lot more like what we saw in Christian Ponder's first year as a starter, where Ponder ran for over 150 yards running the option against University of Miami. When you're operating with a little bit more limited playbook for a guy who can move, who's more of a dual threat, I think we're going to see a lot of read option and some true option with Golson to use some of what he does. And the benefit of some of that stuff is when you run read option, when you run true option and some of that, defenses, it simplifies the coverages you face, because defenses can't run exotic stuff to complicate things in the passing game if they think that there's a chance that the quarterback could run and it gash it. So that's a way for Fisher to simplify things for Golson, and I think that's more what we're going to see. And that allows Golson the ability to grow in some of the other areas of the playbook. As far as the rest, getting on the same page with the receivers and so on, I mean, most of the routes that he's throwing and all that, he's thrown before. And that, again, he's coming from a college offense, a college passing offense with vertical stems and vertical throws and that sort of thing. So he should be able to do that. Anyway, let's go ahead. And again, this is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network. Now we're going to turn to the defensive side of the ball. Why don't you give me a couple things that stuck out on the defensive side of the ball before we move on to the lightning round, and then we'll close.
Well, on the defensive side of the ball, you got to start with Josh Sweat and the progress that he's made. I've been astounded at just how quickly he's been able to come back from this, because at the July Jimbo Fisher camp, he was walking around with a limp. I did not expect him to be available any time before November, and now I'm starting to wonder if he doesn't get major playing time starting in September.
Yeah, he's going to be playing in those first two games against the Patsies regardless. He's going to get probably 50% of the reps in those games because he needs them. The question is going to be how much he plays beyond that, but I think we're going to see an awful lot of him, especially now that, there's really even more reason for Chris Kasher to be buried on the depth chart, and with Featherston having his knee cleaned up and sitting out a little bit, that's even more time for Sweat to step into that role. So I think we're going to see a bunch of him.
I mean, I don't think that I didn't think that he would play in the first two games. I'm still not sure that he does, even though there's limited options, because they might want to take him and bring him back into game situations a little slower. But I wouldn't be surprised at all if he's playing by Boston College.
I think he plays in the first couple games. I don't know how many reps, but I think he plays. Again, because you're dealing with a lower level of competition, and if you want to bring a guy in game situations, bring him up to speed. Well, you know, when you're playing Texas State, that really is a level up on high school that you're not at the Boston College level. If anything, I think he may only play a little bit against Boston College, but I think he'll play more in those first couple.
Well, I'm not talking about bringing him up to speed in the situation. I'm talking about making sure his knee is fully healthy and able to go.
Well, I mean, he's been going in team. He's been actually taking reps in team situations now.
In
full pads, though. But yes, limited. He's taking fewer reps, but he's taking them. So that means he's already doing some of that, which means you probably give him some reps in some of those early games. But at any rate, by the time the schedule actually kicks up, it looks like he's actually going to be one of the guys that you can count on. So let's go ahead and then one other quick thing, and then we'll do a rapid fire, some things that we've heard. Go ahead.
Marquez White is going to win the second
without
quarterback
a doubt.
Slot.
Without a doubt. He's
without a
awesome.
Doubt. 99.5% sure, unless he gets injured, knock on wood, unless he gets injured, Marquez White will win that job.
Yep, without a doubt. And it's because he's gone out and taken it. Not because Ryan Green has not been good enough, not because the other guys haven't been good enough, but because Marquez White has gone out and taken that job. So, and that's, again, that's a good sign. And I'll go into then one of the things that I've heard coming out of camp and out of practices so far is that the defense has made some huge strides, that the defense has looked much better as camp has gone along, and that they're looking like they're going to be a pretty good defense moving forward. And, you know, in particular, they're going to run a lot of dime with Nate Andrews at the money, like we projected. And that's going to let them get their best 11 on the field, because right now the defensive back situation, with some of the defensive backs with size like Derwin James and some of these others, they can put those guys on the field, have lots of speed to stop some of the spread stuff, and they'll be fine. There is some concern about whether or not this team is going to stop the run well enough. We're going to find out right away with Boston College in week 3, because they are going to challenge them in that. But BC and Miami are really the only teams, maybe Louisville, they're the only teams that are going to challenge Florida State in that regard until maybe Florida, and Florida may not have any offensive linemen left on the roster by that point. So it's going to be interesting to see how this defense develops, but I'm hearing very positive things coming out of camp.
I mean, I'm hearing the exact same thing, especially in the pass rush.
Yeah, the pass rush is completely transformed thanks to some differences in what they're doing, what they're asking those guys to do, and also some guys are maturing a little bit, but the pass rush is much better. Thank you, Brad Lawing.
Yeah, you know, we got to talk to Lawing for the first time ever, you know, about a week ago, and he definitely threw some shade at
Sal Cenceri. Yeah, without a doubt.
Talking about putting players in position to use their abilities to the best of their ability rather than trying to fit a square peg in a round hole and using a guy like Mario Edwards Jr. as a pass rusher.
Yeah, well, and we all talked about that. Well, and the thing is, they had Edwards on the edge, but we all knew that he wasn't being asked to rush the passer like an edge rusher. But the problem is then if he's not, and this is what some of our premium subscribers said at the time, if he's not being asked to do that, then who is? And the thing is, they didn't have anybody on the field that was being asked to do that. And now they're going to have two guys in the edge. You know, this is traditional Florida State defense in that regard. They're returning a little bit to that with two guys who can bend the edge and who can get around the corner a little bit and cause problems with their quickness and with their length. And again, in dime situations, particularly in passing situations, I think people are going to be very surprised by the level of pressure that this defense is able to bring, both in terms of the pass rush and in terms of the kind of coverage that they're able to play. I think this team is going to bring a lot more pressure, put a lot more pressure on offenses in those situations than what we saw last year, where it seemed like teams could sort of sit back and pick apart. I don't think you're going to see that this year. The question really is, are they going to be able to stop the run well enough on first down to put themselves in that situation most of the time? And again, I think we may see more situational substitutions to get to that point against a lot of these teams, where you're going to see Ricky Leonard and Walker on the field together, that sort of thing, on the edge to give a little bit bigger profile against the Boston College on first down and maybe second down, and then open things up as you get into the passing situation. So it's going to be a really interesting thing to break down in those first few weeks to see how they're actually going to scheme this up.
Yeah, I mean, you've got Walker is a guy that I'm very excited to watch this year. He seemed to really turn the corner during the spring. He started taking more of a leadership role. He gets it.
Well, and the thing is, he's asked to do. I think he's the guy that Lowing was most talking about in terms of asking guys to do what they do well. Because that guy doesn't move well backwards or laterally, but he's a load moving forward, and that's what they're asking him to do in this defense now, is just put pressure on the pocket, bull rush, get around the corner, use your explosiveness that direction, and we're not going to ask you to drop in pass coverage all that much. We're not going to ask you to play hands, you know, play with your hand off the ground, play in a 2-point stance, catch the blow and try to read that and beat a guy to the corner. We're not going to ask you to do that. We're just going to ask you to put pressure. And I think that's what caused him to turn the corner.
I also think that the coaching, like the way that Lawing coaches compared to the way Sal coaches, made a big difference.
Yeah, I think you're right there too. He's more positive.
He is definitely more positive, because you could listen to Sal from across the field and you know that he's either yelling at Casher or Walker last year.
Usually Casher, but yeah.
Usually Casher. But I mean, you could be sitting over here at the quarterbacks, you hear Sal yelling, and you know who it's at.
Yeah, and Lowing is really, I mean, I think a lot of it's a confidence issue there, where, you know, he's brought a lot of confidence there. And again, asking guys to do what they do well is, you know, that helps confidence as well, because they start to have some success, and then success breeds success. So, I mean, Walker's a limited player. There's no doubt about it. He's not going to be a guy, you know, Josh Sweat is a 5-tool defensive end. He can do anything you ask him to do. He's a Swiss Army knife, and he's good at everything, at least, you know, once he gets fully healthy. Walker's not that. He's a 280-pound guy. He's going to be best if you just ask him to get his pad level low and move and go forward and try to bend the edge a little bit. But don't ask him to catch. Don't ask him to catch the blocker. Don't ask him to try to contain the edge without moving forward, because he's just not going to be able to do that. He's a guy that moves well forward. And I think that's one of the things that when Lowing came in and he started to evaluate, he saw some of this and said, why the hell are they asking this guy? Why are they asking this guy to do this? He can't do that. And so he's just changed that.
I agree. I mean, there's really not much else to say after that. Basically, all of your pass rushers, your defensive ends, and your linebackers last season were asked to do things that they just couldn't do.
Yep. So any other things? Quickly, rapid fire before we go.
Yeah, Pig Harrison's going to win the starting job over Ermin Lane.
That's, again, that may surprise some. And Ermin Lane will still play quite a bit because of his blocking, but Harrison does bring a lot more vertical explosiveness to this offense, and that's why he's going to play. All right, that's going to do it for us. This, again, has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the vSporto Network, in association with NoleDigest.com, bringing you all FSU all the time. I'm your host, Jason Staples. On behalf of Wayne McGahee III from NoleDigest.com, thanks for listening.
I made this.